Back once more for another round on the On and Off the Pitch podcast. So much to talk about in this little latest roundup on the Barclays Women's Championship and the WSL, and a little bit of, well, just about what happens in the locker room in terms of managers' struggles to select a team. We start, or I start, with my visit to Prince's Park, London City Lionesses, who are in a little bit of trouble down near the bottom of the league, taking on table top leaders Sunderland in this really, really important fixture, which took place at the weekend. I was there looking forward to a very good game, but also wondering how things would pan out because the seasons for either team have been vastly different. A team which had a very difficult season last year, Sunderland, are flying high. And they're almost being ignored in terms of where they are with regards to their position. Unlike London City Lionesses, who have a developing and growing fan base, people are still looking over there thinking, will they survive? Won't they survive? So I was sat in the stands before the game, and it was really strange to see the former striker of London City Lionesses, Adupe, warming up with Sunderland ahead of the game. How different their paths have developed since she left the club. As I waited for the game, right, I was actually looking on Twitter, as you do, to see what was happening in terms of the games that had kicked off earlier that day. And I was blown away by the scoreline that I saw. Sheffield United were beating Crystal Palace. And I thought, what? What? I was at the game the previous week at Selhurst Park, and I thought, I mean, Sheffield United played really, really well in the first half. They had some really good passages of play. They control the game. Some Palace fans will disagree, but I believe they definitely controlled the first 45 minutes. And I didn't think that they would be able to get the result at home, considering how strong Crystal Palace are. Crystal Palace had it in their hands to win all their games. And they still can, and kind of run away with what's possibly the exit from this league. But they were losing by 1-0, and they didn't win the game. We'll talk more about that later. So I was really kind of like, oh. And whilst doing that, I was sat in front of the visiting Sunderland fans who were over the moon with what was happening elsewhere and crossing their fingers in preparation of the game ahead. Had a brief conversation in terms of what could happen and what might happen. London City Lionesses, they needed the win. They needed the 3 points. And Sunderland, they needed as well. It's a different kind of need. It would have been great for them to have had the 3 points and stretched their lead, considering they played an extra game. But they were still comfortable. The fans were still kind of like, yeah, it's okay. We'll see what happens. So ahead of this game, I would have wagered quite a bit of money on the home team losing that game, right? Their form has not been great. Their form has not been great for the duration of the season, right? That's abundantly clear. Whereas Sunderland can be described as this team that no one really paid too much attention to. They were written off as being a fluke, being on top of the league at the beginning of the season, and yet here they are, only a handful of games to go, and they're still on top. So it's always better to be on top of the pile and watch everyone chasing you than be part of the chasing pack, because it only takes one slip, as Crystal Palace has now found out to their cost, that things change quickly within a week. So with Sunderland being top in March, and London City Lionesses being close to the exit door in the same month, both teams, as I've said, really needed the points. So in terms of performance on the day, I can only kind of describe it in this way. Sunderland were miles away from their normal standard. Miles away. They were pinned in by in their own half, pinned in, I would say, in the early stages of the game. London City Lionesses, who haven't had, I would say, the most fluid approach to games at times, right? Did their best in terms of stretching the play, using the flanks, and pulling the defenders out of position, but also bypassing the midfield press from Fenton and Kitchen. And Kitchen, who's returning, former London City Lionesses or Lionesses player, to the ground. So Fenton and Kitchen in the midfield for Sunderland, who've had a really good season so far. Sunderland fans will say they've been probably one of the best signings, or they've surpassed their expectation in terms of players who've arrived in the summer and really cemented themselves in the team. So their passing game was off. This is Sunderland. And there seemed to be tension in their overall demeanor. I'm not sure whether or not they were aware of the scoreline elsewhere, whether that's part of the pre-game chat when you look online and someone says to you, "Oh, the opposition have lost. This is what you need to do." Who knows? It's possible. I don't know. But knowing what the stakes were during this game and in the league overall, Sunderland really could have done with the points. Talking about LCL. Right, I'm going to call London City Lionesses this from the LCL just so that we get it clear. They were good to watch, right? They were prob this was probably the best game they've played in a really long time. I didn't see the game against Reading, but this was one of their best games. They were more aggressive, they were more forward thinking in this game and in their approach to how they need to go about and get a result in any of the games that I've seen this season, right? They were moving the ball well. They were moving it to feet. They were finding patterns of play, which seemed to confuse and concern the visitors, right? Let's just say that. So Sunderland weren't on their game. They just couldn't click as they wanted to in the first 45. And I thought that they would. And this was what I would call a well-contested game. And in some and some of the challenges, right, and the tackles in this game were they were extremely close to being in what the yellow card zone, right? And even when they were yellow cards, in my opinion, the refs seemed to be ignoring the ferocious and various calls from the benches and the fans, right? As to the lack of free kicks or kind of sanction being awarded in their favor, right? Now, I've got to say this for I've seen Sunderland a couple of times over the year at Prince's Park, and this is something I can definitely state is true in my opinion, from what I've seen, right? I don't believe Sunderland have ever had a good rub of the green when it comes to refereeing decisions when they visited Prince's Park. I'm not saying the referee's been biased, but you've got to question sometimes the officials and think, what are you watching? What are you watching? It's unreal. And the Sunderland bench, the Sunderland players, the Sunderland supporters can feel really aggrieved that on the number of times that I've seen them play at that ground, they don't get the rub. Even the simplest things like throw-ins, just don't get the call right. I mean, just like, honestly, it's mind-boggling. I'm all for watching a combative and compelling game of football between two teams, right? But when the ball goes out for a throw, just call it the right way. Seriously, call it the right way. So yeah, very, very difficult for to watch it. And in terms of the fans who I was sat very close to, they made their displeasure of the overall officiating really clearly and loudly, and they had a real reason to do so. And to ask for certain things that go in their favor. And what seemed to me, and to anyone who's watching it in the naked eye in real time, the back pass that goes to Maloney and Maloney's attempt to clear the ball, it seemed like in real time a clear penalty, right? A clear penalty, only to see the claims waved away or being ignored. I just could not believe what I was seeing. Honestly, so that's that, right? I don't like to talk about the referees really generally because it's all about the players. But when you see something, you think, how did they get that wrong? You just got to ask yourself a question. It benefited London City Lionesses, aka LCL, because they still maintain their lead. But there's something to be said about the officials getting the call right, especially when so much is at stake. I mean, football, there's so much at stake in football on any given day, at any time of the season, but especially when it's close to the end and the teams that are in competition with one another, are vying to stay at the top of the league. They're vying to stay away from the relegation zone. It's really important. Okay. So in terms of the players on the pitch, standout player, Satchel, displayed the kind of energy that LCL definitely needed in this league, and in particular to their fight to stay up. Her runs were great, pulling the centre backs right across the pitch, endless energy, endless runs, ably supported by Bo Lorca, who was in a much more advanced position, seen her previously play out wide on the left, much more central, and they seemed to have the freedom to go across the pitch and close down in a much more forward-thinking way than I'd seen previously. Carter for London Lionesses, with a slightly more withdrawn position, dropping into midfield, excellent ball control, and her and Fenton were entwined in what I could only call their own little battle of dominance, right? Who would come out on top? Fenton usually has a good game, right? But I've seen Fenton play at Prince's Park for Blackburn. Usually has a great game. Fantastic. This weekend, not a greatest game. Not a greatest game. Considering I say that she's been one of the players who has been kind of like a standout signing. Some Sunderland fans may disagree, but to join a club and be embedded into the first team so quickly is a mark of her work rate and her ability and her tenacity. But it wasn't the greatest game for her. She never came out on top. Carter would get the better in terms of their entanglements during the 90 minutes, always getting a foul, but holding up the ball, regardless of Fenton's approach or attempts to get the ball, it just didn't work. So there's that. In terms of defence, both teams, I would say, had their work cut out. Adjupi would have loved to have scored against her former team. Just didn't happen. Scar was an ever-present threat for Sunderland. Again, stretching the defenders. I think the London City Lionesses has had a three at the back, which kind of helped as well. I think that their kind of performance and forward thinking, but it didn't. Scar didn't get the rub of the green in terms of clear attempts that she could say that she would have definitely buried on goal. And despite their moments of prominence, they failed to make either keeper. And I'm talking about those players, Dupie and Scar. Either keeper, the keeper, not either keeper, Maloney kind of work enough in terms of making saves. There was one particular save later on. I think that was from Brown, a good strike towards goal, but that was in the second half. Shots saved by both keepers. Impressive save from Maloney, I just mentioned. And it looked comfortable, but Brown, Jay Brown, good shot. Comfortably saved. It was a solid strike. It was a solid strike. But the goal, which kind of guaranteed the points, or not kind of, it did guarantee the points for LCL, stemmed from a good move. The ball down to the flank, Bo Lorca, fortunate to get by the player, drew in and was lucky with the bounce. The cross is kind of pushed out into Carter's path, a gentle push into an area in front of Little John, and I can say her carefully floated curling shot, and that's what it is. It looked didn't travel at speed, it didn't seem, but it nestled into the net, and on the 25th minute, and that was really a mark of cool and composure in front of goal when was needed, and that even at the early stage, you can say that was the bit where they wrapped it up. But there were moments where Sunderland definitely could have got back into the game, but for the lack of a penalty, and for the lack of or the failure to get shots beyond Maloney, caused them to kind of go away from this game and not get the results. They really put the pressure on in the second half, Sunderland, but not in a manner that I would have expected from them. I would have expected a little bit more intensity. London City Lionesses really did fight. It was one challenge where the fans were up in arms. They actually thought it was GBH. Never let it be said that women's football doesn't have that cutting edge in terms of fight. There is that there when 3 points are up for grabs. Nothing is easy in the Barclays Women's Championship at all. It is not an easy league. And even when you're at the top and you know what's happened to your rivals and they've lost games, you've still got to go out there and play for the 90 plus minutes and secure the points. And I suppose if Sunderland had scored first, it probably would have been a very, very different story. And it would have been interesting to see how LCL would have responded to that if they did concede. LCL did manage to hold on to the advantage and take all 3 points and much needed points, right? So they move up the table by a centimeter because it's really close down there. That's how much advantage they have. They've won, but it's Sunderland's still sitting pretty at the top, but they will rue the result and. Not just the result. I think they'll rue the performance that they've delivered, and they will not miss the referee at all. They all will not be sending the referee or her assistant any kind of well-wishing cards or Christmas cards or anything at all. There'll be no love letters to them after this game. It was shocking, and I felt, as I've said, I felt for the Sunderland bench. I felt for the head coach. Some of the calls that not getting a fair rub, and you just really want that in football. So for the simple things to be called the right way, and it's comical when you see it as a neutral. You sit back and think, "Whoa, I'm glad did you miss that?" But for those that are invested and they spend all week preparing for a game which will determine where they are next season. But as I've said, either promotion or escaping relegation or being relegated, you just want those little things to be right. You want them called right. And in my opinion, they should have had a penalty. I'd have to watch it again. And even if I watched it again, I doubt very much I would change my mind because of the camera. And you just look at it and you think, penalty. In real time, it looked like a penalty. And I would be hard pressed to say in a replay that it didn't look like a penalty. So there's that. And with that said, London City Lionesses will feel happier until the next game. We will go and look at the rest of the results of the Barclays Women's Championship. Boom. What can I say? What can I say? So, for the rest of the results, as I mentioned right at the top, before this game, checking Twitter, Sheffield United, the reverse fixture from the previous week, played host to Crystal Palace, and they would go and win by 2-0. Brown and Goodwin on the score sheet for Sheffield United. Absolutely fantastic. Durham, the mighty Durham, played host to Charlton. Charlton, who didn't have a great result the previous week, get the goal in the first half from a cross or free kick. And Dow with the goal, so they are happy with that. They get all 3 points. Southampton at home, they hosted Reading. Reading got bashed up. Southampton 5, Reading 0, Wilkinson 2, Morris 1, Farah in the second half. Bish, bash, bosh. Southampton putting the hurt on Reading there. We all know about London City Lionesses and their 1-0 win against Sunderland. Fixture in terms of a score draw. Didn't see this happening. Birmingham City 0, Blackburn Rovers 0. Birmingham, who really have got a They pulled in some great players in their squad. Everyone tipped them to be promoted this season. They're still there and thereabouts, but there's a pack just ahead of them. They probably wouldn't have wanted a draw at home and probably wouldn't have expected. Fantastic for Blackburn Rovers and their head coach. Super, super stuff. And the last fixture in the Barclays Women's Championship, Lewis. And Watford, I mean, when you're talking about a 6-pointer, Lewis at home to Watford on the road, 1. Rigla, Lewis, what can I say? They really, really needed that. Watford, come on, what's happening, Watford? What's happening? We need to see something from you. There's still time. There's still time. I'm still of the opinion that no team from this league should be relegated. Okay, it's a broken record from me, but it's just what I think. Sunderland top, 34 points, just behind them with a game in hand on 33. Palace, Southampton, 33 points in third. Charlton, with a game in hand as well, 33 points. Interesting between Charlton and Crystal Palace, all to play for. Birmingham still thereabouts, 16 games played, 27 points. Sheffield United with a nice win in sixth place on 23. Blackburn Rovers behind them on the same level of points. Durham on 20 points in ninth place. And this is where it's all interesting. London City Lionesses, 19 points. Below them in 10th, Reading on 18 points, Lewis on 16 points in 11th, and then Watford with 12 points. But they do have a game in hand. There are points, no doubt, will be lost and gained in fixtures where people like myself would say they're definitely going to win and something goes wrong. It can happen. I've seen it happen. I'm not going to say anything else about who's going to win the league because it's too close to call, and it is extremely close to see who's going to escape relegation from this, or not escape, be relegated from this league. I don't even like using the word. Gosh, it's horrible. There's that. So we will go over the results of the Barclays Women's Super League just after this. So we come back to the Barclays Women's Championship. No, we don't. We go back to the WSL. We've done the championship. We're not doing the championship. No, we've done the WSL. We're going to do the WSL. That's what we're going to do. The results as they are. Chelsea 3, Arsenal 1, Bosch, Everton at home 1, Aston Villa away 2, Manchester United 2. Bristol City nil. How is this game? Only got two goals. I don't know. I'm asking for a friend. Liverpool at home, 3. West Ham on the road, 1. Brighton at home, 1. Manchester City, 4. I'm going to say it, right? Sure, for City, not getting enough credit for the goals that she has scored this season. What is going on, mainstream media? Seriously, not enough praise, not enough being written about this player who's scoring goals at a very good rate. If you're going to talk up the women's game, talk up everyone, please. Thank you. Moving on. Tottenham at home 1, Leicester on the road nil. So in terms of the table, Chelsea and Manchester City are at the top with 40 points. Goal differences is key. Manchester City have only conceded 10. Chelsea have conceded 14, but they've scored six more. It's going to be there and thereabouts. Arsenal in third place of 34 points. Manchester United with 28 points in fourth place. Liverpool just behind in terms of goals scored, etc. 28 points. Tottenham 22 points. Aston Villa 19 points. Leicester 16 points. Everton 14 points. Brighton and Hove Albion 14 points. West Ham on 12 points and right at the bottom of the league, Bristol City with 6 points, who are looking to be packing their bags for another destination known as the Barclays Women's Championship. It's still possible they might escape, I think, but don't be gone long, Bristol. We need you back. Don't be gone long. Don't be gone long. We are going to talk about players and managers' problems with picking players just after this.
Definite penalty.
So we have, right, this week, there has been a really interesting conversation about the problems that some managers have experienced in selecting players when there are player relationships, player to player relationship in the league. And Emma Hayes's comments, or the question which was posed to her about player, the how she's had to deal with it, or not she, but the football world has to deal with it in the women's game, And the quote is really interesting. It's the challenges that it poses when there are players in a relationship with another player in the team, and whether or not one player is close to end of a contract and another player is competing for the position of another player in the squad. Emma has stated that this is, challenges for the management in terms of selection. Longer term, Emma says that in an ideal world, you wouldn't have to deal with that. I don't know how you kind of factor that in. If you could say to someone, we won't sign you if you're seeing someone else, or we won't bring them along as well as part of the deal. I suppose that's how that's a conversation along the line, if that's currently happening. And Emma's, comments said it's quite challenging for coaching teams to have to deal with. This you manage those things in the locker room and what that means. And I've never really considered that before. I've never really thought, oh gosh, I wonder how that kind of plays in, to a manager trying to select a team, and you think, why is that player playing, or why is that player being sold? And then you see who else is sold, and you realize, oh, they're together, and they go off and play for another team. That right, okay. So there's problems, and maybe that comment was indirectly linked to players who have left in the last transfer window, how they weren't being picked and they weren't getting as much game time. Who knows? Who knows? But it is something to think about, and whether or not supporters, fans, follow players, teams because of the relationship that players have with one another, and they buy into that in terms of who they follow and who they support. I don't necessarily know, but it was very interesting to hear the comments and the question being posed. And I know that there have been some comments on social media which has kind of challenged, or they don't understand what the problem is, or there are some fans who are for Emma's comments and some who are against Emma's comments. And I was thinking, where else in the world can you go and get a job and you say to your employer, hey, look, I want to bring my partner needs to come along. Then you need to pick them, and then when you get them to the club and they say, why aren't you picking my partner? They need to play as well, they're really good, and you've got that dynamic going on. And I think it's not that you it's not as if it's only unique to the women's game. I mean, you've only got to look in terms of the world of politics. How many people get jobs because they know someone who knows someone, or they've given a donation to someone and therefore they've been benefited by getting a seat in the House of Lords, or they're part of a business where they buy in and their investment or their shareholders, etc. It happens. There's a little bit of nepotism, if that's what you want to call it, in the men's footballing world. You think, well, where's that possible? Does that happen? And I think the one thing that's kind of it reminded me of really was the recent story that I heard about Kylian Mbappe's proposed potential move from PSG to Real Madrid. And it's reported on certain online news agents and blogs, etc., that Kylian Mbappe wants his younger brother, to leave PSG and go to Madrid. And there's this world-class World Cup winning footballer who is putting demands to a club he hasn't signed for yet, right? Hasn't signed for yet, and it says, yeah, I'll join you, but you need to bring my brother along as well. And I've never ever, I don't know if you could do that in any kind of other work, your day-to-day job, that you can ask that question. So the problem that Emma Hayes is talking about in terms of player relationship, that exists elsewhere in football, when players demand that either their sibling or they either get a job or they get brought along as well because they want to stay as part of the family unit. And I can understand it, but to demand that they come along and be part of the same team that you're joining, and therefore they get the benefits of your, like, I know you can do that, but I mean, if it's going to be tackled in the women's game, and Emma Hayes is saying it's a problem in terms of selection, and there's a the partner is in the team, and therefore the partner is probably not deemed good enough for the position that they might play in, then there's a problem. For Mbappe's situation, from what I've read, is that the younger brother, who's only 10, 17, has been allowed to train with the first team. So he's already getting preferential treatment. So there is an idea that he may go to Real Madrid and he have the same experience. And I'm like thinking, I don't know if I could want, I'd want my mum to come to work with me because she's my mum or my brother. I mean, if I go for an interview and I get a job, I'm not, I don't know if I'm bringing anyone else with me, you know? But I suppose it's very different for in the world of football. You know, it's an interesting thing to read and think about as to what high profile footballing stars, male or female, will say or do to ensure that they are taken care of financially, emotionally, and but also who they bring along with them and what kind of challenges that brings, or you know, the challenges that it brings to the locker room, but also how are they viewed by their teammates? But how does that work? I mean, how do you kind of square that circle? Like, I'm bringing my partner, and she's not as good as you, but she's going to get in. She's going to play ahead of you. I mean, what? How do you? I mean, seriously, how does that work? I don't know. It was a very interesting comment to hear. It was a very interesting response to those comments, but also it definitely provokes thought as to what it is like for a manager and what it has been like for a manager to deal with. And yeah, I mean, there's also the question about coach and player relationships. There's a line, there's a safeguarding line. There is a grooming line. I'm using that word advisedly, of course, that you would kind of think that if you're in a position of responsibility, where you're safeguarding, where you're trying to take care of everyone, I mean, how do you go and cross the line and get into a relationship with a player if you're a coach? So it's not just player to player. There's this whole kind of is this colorful selection of issues that you have to face as a manager, I suppose, in every world, whether it's in the women's game or the men's game. What will be brought to the door by the player in question that you want to sign or you have signed, and how do you deal with it? And it's trying to really build solid ground on the beach, because if it hasn't been established already, it will be really difficult to challenge that going forward, and the way things are. And I know that they say that when the game becomes more professional, if you have been allowed to bring your partner to work with you, or they've signed to a club with you and you're in love, it's going to be very difficult for another club not to sign you if you are a world-class player, because you've already had those demands met elsewhere, that they come along and say no. So how do you address that? Where do you start to address it? And how far back do you go? And how far do those restrictions reach every corner of the football world, if the football world does have caught it, probably just round, who knows? But it's interesting to see, and it's interesting to think about. Anyway, that's it from me. Until the next one, I'll see you all later.